Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on October 15th, 2014, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Please welcome the Director of Diplomacy, Volker Schlondorf.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thanks so much for coming tonight.
Well, great pleasure to have such a great audience.
I noticed at the end of the film, it's dedicated to Richard Holbrook, who was a good friend of yours and a lifelong diplomat. And I was wondering if you could just talk about him for a moment.
Let's take it by the end. Yeah. I knew Richard Holbrook here in New York because he was a theater buff, and I think it was John Guare who one day introduced me to him backstage. And then he became, after the fall of the wall, he became ambassador in Bonn first and then in Berlin. And we kind of were just befriended. I showed him around Berlin. And then he was, had been with an agreement dealing with Milosevic to the peace in Yugoslavia. He wrote a book about that, To End a War. And I was very intrigued and interested to do it, but nobody wanted to do it. Everybody said, well, who cares about Yugoslavia? So when this project came up, well, everybody cares about Paris. So instead of dealing with a diplomat with Milosevic, we have a diplomat with the German general. But very much of the technique, the tactic, the ruthlessness, the deceitfulness, I hold from Richard Holbrook. Anything to achieve the goal.
Right. And I think Dayton was also negotiated with a Swedish diplomat.
Well, that I don't know, but I mean, the tricks and deceiving he told me he had to use was astonishing, but especially the criminal ruthlessness of Milosevic. Anyhow, that's a far shot. It did motivate me. It was not so much when I read the play. The producer sent me a play. It was not my idea. And I immediately, well, there were two things. It was the city of Paris, which I love, probably the first non-destroyed city I've seen in my life when I came there first in 1956, and was used to our bombed out and badly rebuilt German cities. All of a sudden, I discovered what a real city could look like, unforgettable. At that time, I went to boarding school, and my comrades... next to me was Bertrand Tavernier when we were 16, 17 years old, did our baccalaureate together. And he told me, well, you owe it to a German general. I say, okay. I didn't want to hear more about it. So when I read the play, I felt like a calling. I have to do this. I have to do it because of the city of Paris. I have to do it because, yeah, of course, German-French relationships. And I thought of the diplomat. You know, how isn't it great with the power of words you can get arms to be silenced?
And now this was a play, Nils Arestrup and André Du Soulier had both played those roles on stage in Paris, and you came in to make a film. How did you go about directing them, you know, given that they had been, you know, I'm sure, ingrained in those roles for so long, and now to act in a film, which is a very different kind of performance?
Well, fortunately, I hadn't seen them ever on stage. And when I came into the project, the French producer immediately said, of course, you want to take a German actor for the German general, also for co-production reasons, probably. And I said, yeah, but let me first meet with the original cast. And it was really Nils Arestrup who gave the last push, if I was hesitating, Because, I mean, I was a little bit afraid. I thought, well, okay, two guys in a room talking. I mean, how can that ever be a movie? But after the meeting with Niels Arestrup, who I had seen in other films and never on stage, yeah, I felt that he was such a very, very special personality and character, very guarded, very shy, supposed to be difficult. Well, anything that would attract a director to work with him.
Yeah.
And then he said, yeah, it's not really a play. It's a meditation about history. I didn't forget that.
Right. And they seem to be actors who have very different styles in approaching their roles.
Well, they're different personalities, but they both were aware that there was a having done the play 300 times or so, that was an advantage, but also a terrible handicap, because it could be stale, it could be automatic, it could be not alive anymore, and you know how it is, the camera wants spontaneity. And how can you recreate spontaneity if you've done it 300 times? But, I mean, I love working with actors, so it was really a challenge. And they both said, well, it's so much better than it ever was on stage, which comes from the intimacy of it. You have to project on stage, you know, to get to the last stalls. And here I said, look, but I feel like, you know, you should be breathing down his neck when he's taking refuge behind his desk. Don't let him there. Go around, you know, be close to him, whisper in his ears. Try it, you know, you have to try to somehow get through his armor, to his somehow find whether there is somewhere a human fiber in him. And well, that was really, let's say we tried to crack the general with the complicity of the diplomat, or you might say to crack Niels Arestrup with the complicity of Dussolier. There was a lot similarity for both parts, for each of the actors. I mean, they were really, they fitted like a glove, yeah, to their parts.
And now the film had its premiere at the Berlin Film Festival earlier this year, and I know it's also played in France. Can you talk a little bit about how the movie was received in both countries?
Yeah, Berlin was very good, but that's an international festival with a very international audience. In France, it was extremely popular with... could only dream of, you know, 500,000 spectators over the first 3 months. So that was tremendous. And in Germany, we had the same kind of reviews and presence in the media, but nobody showed up to look at it. So I'm waiting for the results here to see whether it only a patriotic thing in France, and is it because of the French actors, and does it not travel, or does it even travel across water? We'll find out.
Okay, I want to turn it over to the audience. If you have a question, just raise your hand right here in the aisle. If you can ask your question into the microphone, so everyone can hear. Thank you.
Mr. Schlondorf, I have a question about how the movie, or in the movie, Scholtitz portrays the French, and
that's me.
Well, I would go along with it, but anyway, you say that it was well received in France. If I would be in Paris, I would look at that and hear those words from a German. I would be taken aback.
Do you mean they're masochists? No. There's two things. This is fiction. The background is totally authentic. I mean, the we know that the Allies landed. They were standing in at the gates of Paris. Hitler gave this crazy order. The bridges were mined. The general did everything to blow up the city. And he met the Swedish consul several times for other matters, but also they spoke about the destruction of Paris. But this night and this place and the secret door and so on, that is, let's say, movies. That's the movies. That is fiction. That is where it gets interesting. I wouldn't like to do a docudrama. But of course, I thought that the more the French hate the general, the better it is. So I gave him a few lines about, Moscow's comparison and whatnot, to push it further, but also to, on the other hand, I found all these things about, that is a quote of his interrogation, you know, about the execution of Jews on Crimea and the destruction of Rotterdam and other cities and so on. Not to anger anybody, no, for dramatic reasons. The tougher he was, you know, the bigger the challenge for the consul, and the better the drama. So I wanted them that he was, well, what was Stroheim called? The man you love to hate. I wanted him the man you hate.
Just a follow-up, and the Lanvin. Was that fiction or the name chosen as Lanvin, for the man who?
Oh, the character didn't exist in the play. The French engineer who comes and has to blow up Paris and has all the plans ready. I invented that to make it visible. At first, I had written, you know, that we see the soldiers working with the explosives under the bridges. First of all, it was complicated to shoot, and secondly, it wasn't scary. Whereas just, you know, we found that they still had the blueprints of the Eiffel Tower and of most of the buildings. The French are very systematic. and so I invented this engineer who would have to be the go-between and to blow up his own city. I love this character.
I just wanted to know why you made his name Lanvin.
Lanvin?
Yeah. Name.
Oh, yes, but it's a very common name in France. It's like Miller in America. You wouldn't perfume Miller, I agree. But no, Lanvin is a very common name. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. There is wine, of course, in Lanvin, and the actor, and I wrote the part for him, is actually a viticulteur. He has a winery in Meursault. He does the best French white wine. He was in my previous movie as well, and I love him. Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Herr Schlöndorff, thank you very much for this very capturing film. The general, brutal as he might appear, in a way seems in the end still the upright soldier. After all, he is a soldier, and he claims to, or he claims the honor of a soldier for himself. And then he is touched in a way and is moved to the right decision. So in the end, it's a little bit that he saves Paris. And coming back to the reason why the Germans might not feel very comfortable in the cinema, maybe they are uncomfortable having the story told to them that it was a German, after all, who saved Paris in the end.
Well, there were others. Florence was... there were a few ones who saved the city, but most of them destroyed a lot of cities. What I was attracted to was the ambiguity of that it was, after all, a villain, I mean, a real nasty general, and a consul who was a liar. Together they saved Paris. So it is not like the good men do the good deeds and the villains do the bad things. Well, that would be too easy. Life is different. And that's what I was really interested in. And that doesn't exclude that. And you find a person behind it, a human being, a very sentimental one, very like Himmler, who was just playing here, who saw no contradiction in telling his daughter that she should always be careful to be a decent person while doing what he was doing. It is this complete split in the personality. You know, he executed and killed thousands of people in his career, but then when it comes to his family, all of a sudden, oh, life is secret. Or like life is sacred. Thank you. Jet lag.
Yes, over in the
very
glasses.
Old computer up here.
You're very frank in describing it as fiction, as indeed it is, but I think a docudrama would be at least as interesting, since in reality the general asked the consul a couple of days before to go through the Allied lines to urge the Allies to come in as quickly as possible so that he wouldn't have to blow up the city, which is pretty much the opposite of what the film depicts.
Well, that is very disputed. I know that he carried the letter, or his brother did, because he had a heart attack. I went through, I think, every document, and there was about three or four theses written in German universities and history studies, very, very detailed. You can do the docudrama. I won't get back to it.
Right here.
No, I mean, you see, there's this fabulous film Conspiracy about the Wannsee Conference. There you really had the record. And that, I mean, anybody would be a fool not to do that as a docudrama. You know, you just reenact this, and it is scary. But when it, this is kind of a playful situation. We are 70 years later, and I mean, there was a little humor in it. You felt that, I guess.
So. Yeah, I noticed you used, the general used the word for the resistance, he used the word terrorists, which I've never heard used before in a film referring to the resistance, and it's a very modern word. I know it was used years ago.
That was the German language about the French resistance. It was
they did call them terrorists.
Absolutely, they were called terrorists. The word went through many mutations.
We showed a documentary a few years ago called Terrorists in Retirement about French resistance fighters who were retired in the early 80s. It's really interesting. Did you, you have a question?
I just reread what I had read 25, 30 years ago, It's Paris Burning, which is like a docudrama. When I first read it, oh, it was wonderful. Now when I read it, I dismissed it, saying, oh, it's a docudrama, suddenly. I didn't really like it as much as before. And your movie, although more fictional, brings out the truth more clearly than the book does. I think it's much better because the tricks of the discussion. No, it's a play, etc. And the one thing that comes out, which you don't bring it up either, the contrast you talk of the general, and the greatest, the most important contrast in my way of thinking is his being a general and being a human being. As a general, he'll do anything that wins the war. But this was not going to win the war. And I think the main emotional or main psychological reason why he didn't blow up Paris was it was a useless deed. As a general, he would blow up Paris if it would have saved Germany. But this was completely hopeless. So that gap between being a general and being a human being comes out very strongly.
Well, thank you very much. I couldn't have put it better. No comment.
Yeah. Any more questions for Volker? Yes.
I thought that at the end, after the general saved Paris, he will shoot himself. with the gun. It would be more like German-like, like German officer and so on. First time he violated the order, and then he shot himself because of that. So I was a little disappointed.
Well, I'd say you saw too many movies, because in real life, very few generals, actually I only know of a single one, who shot themselves, and he missed. He blew his eye out with Stülpnagel, the predecessor of this one. So they fixed him up, took him to Berlin, and then hanged him.
Yes, in the back, the hat.
Yes, he did even an entire movie in German language in Germany about 10 years ago, where his father was Danish, the languages, so he had this somehow in his ear. But it was tough work for him, and we didn't achieve it during the shooting there. He was doing it in German, but the accent was quite terrible, and then we worked a lot in ADR with him to get him there word by word. Very slightly, yes. Very slightly. Only in some very crucial moments. We were very careful. I was just interested in having him in this part, not only because he was a great actor, because I thought I will avoid so many stereotypes and cliches by not having a German actor doing the German general. It would be more interesting to have this distance through a French actor. And he's the best anyhow. No German actor would have been a better German general.
We have time for just one more question.
It is like in Stalag 17. Nobody would have been a better commando than Otto Preminger.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, first of all, for this love letter to Paris. Extremely moving, extremely beautiful. Something that I was very much thinking about was the equivalency that the German general was drawing between what he was being ordered to do and what the Allies had done to German cities. And I know that this is very much in discussion over the past few years about the Germans as victims in World War II, and specifically in relation to Allied bombings of German cities. And I was wondering if you put it in your movie, and it seems quite pointed.
Well, it was in the play. I was hesitating. Yeah, it's of course it's, yeah. I know. Well, I liked them when the general said, "So everybody will have his martyrs," yeah, of course. I mean, he's quoting the examples, and I was in one of those cities when they were bombed, so in the shelters, so I know what they were talking about, I mean, this was probably one of the very few good wars where it was very clear who are the good ones, who are the bad ones. And nevertheless, they are civilians, and they are casualties, yeah.
Well, thank you again so much for coming, Volker.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks, Film Forum, for its continuous support of film.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.